Hey, you found Music Heads presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks for dropping in. This is a roundtable discussion where a couple of colleagues and I get together each week and have a little fun chatting about some of the new music we're playing on the station and find out if, in fact, it's working for us. I'm the host of the show, Bill DeVille, and it's my pleasure to welcome my guests. Evening host Mark Weed is in the house. Mark.
Thanks for having me back, Bill. Good to be here.
It's
happy spring.
To have you here. Same to you. Mm-hmm. Where is that sunshine?
I know. You can't kill.
And assistant music director David Safar is
talking about sunshine. Here he is.
He's such a ray of sunshine.
Musical sunshine himself.
It's good to be here.
Good to have you, David. Moby is one of the most controversial figures in techno music, praised for putting a face on an anonymous genre and scorned by indie techno hipsters. Any way you look at it, Moby is really one of a small few artists who've sold millions in the world of club, dance, or electronic music. He successfully brought dance music to the mainstream audience in England and in America. He unites rapid-fire disco beats with distorted guitars that draw from world of popular music, the club scene, and sometimes old blues and gospel records. His first hit was the song Go, which was made the top 10 in England back in 1991. His star began to fade in the UK until 1999's Play album, which made him an international superstar, selling some 9 million copies worldwide. Moby was born Richard Melville Hall, receiving his nickname as a child from the fact that Moby Dick author Herman Melville is his great-great-grand-uncle. His musical start was in a hardcore punk band called the Vatican Commandos as a teenager. Later, he briefly even sang with Flipper. I thought that was unbelievable. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
No idea.
Well, their singer was doing some time in jail, so they enlisted Moby to sing along with them. In the mid-80s, he spent a good deal of time in the New York City clubs, dancing, DJing, and hanging out, and that's the inspiration for the new album from Moby. It's called Last Night, and here's a taste of the song I Love to Move In Here. New album from Moby is called Last Night. David, is this working for you?
Well, let me just say, let the backlash continue against Moby.
Ooh.
If you're looking for play, if you're looking for the follow-up, you're not going to the South Side, I'm afraid. You know, the single that they put out for this album was totally deceiving. Alice was this kind of upbeat hip-hop mixed track, and I had really high hopes for this album. But unfortunately, I'm not really a fan of it. I understand where he's going. I know he's trying to sort of get back to what he says are his roots, but I don't think I'm going to be reliving the 80s or 90s club scene because I never liked it
in the first place. So.
And I don't think the album really represents it. There are some touches on this album of Everything Is Wrong. The song Mothers of the Night, I thought was a nice track, but overall, I think it kind of misses for me.
Mark, how about you?
I want to praise Moby's name from the rooftops. I am not down with the backlash. I think this is a perfect example of us indie heads eating our young way too often. Moby is in a perfect position right now to be one of the biggest stars this independent music scene has ever created, and I want him to be that star. I really do. I think he's gone through a transition since Play, obviously. Tried a few experiments, has gotten the backlash ball rolling, but I would like this album to be as huge as Play. I was down with him with Play. I was down with selling every song on the album. I was down with the fact that he was an independent artist that had huge commercial success. And I still love that album. I think it was groundbreaking.
I love it as well, but I think I love it for different reasons than you.
Well, and I'm sure you hate this for different reasons than I love it. Because
hate's a mighty strong word. I wouldn't
go that far. But I have to say, I come from a different scene. First of all, to me, he's one of the only musicians that has actually been a successful DJ. As a DJ myself who played a little while in the clubs, I want a kind of megastar DJ to be a star for a certain length of time. Let's not trash all our stars. And Moby, again, puts this album together like a great DJ set. That is what it is. I've been saying for what, the last year, that why is this an album? The tracks don't go together. This is perfectly sequenced. It is perfectly climactic at track number 10, The Stars, which comes right at 45 minutes, which normally I would say would be a perfect length for an album. But then he goes into four songs, three of which are instrumental. And so it acts as the downbeat time of the night where you can sit back, reflect on what's happened, because this whole album is just that. It's an oral soundscape of going out at night in New York City. And who better to do it? Moby has been a huge star. He's got more money than, and he still lives in downtown New York, and by his own admission.
Small apartment, apparently, too.
Exactly.
With not even a flat screen television.
Exactly. And he goes out on by his own admission once a week at least in the New York scene. He knows what that sounds like, and he's perfectly put it on this album, and props to him. I love that track we started with, I Love to Move In Here. Alice, I gotta say, is kind of, that's the midnight self-doubt song in there. That's like, am I really ready for this to peak? And then the album beautifully does peak in the next four tracks, which are just kind of high life house music that I love, and it takes me back to my club days. I could have done with a few less vocals. The vocals sometimes don't work for me, either just presentation-wise or lyrically it doesn't work.
But lots of diva singers that I've never
exactly
heard of on there.
I know, but that's what going out to a club is all about, you know?
Sure.
You never know who's going to get up on stage and do a little vocal to the background beat, so all props to Moby. I'm falling in love with this album. It works great for me as a soundtrack.
So this is playing when you're going to have your Saturday night dance party. This is part of your soundtrack, then,
yeah,
huh?
It is now.
Okay, David, how about
you? Know,
you?
I like your interpretation of it, Mark, because
yeah,
I think there is a difference in perspective on it. For someone like me who never experienced the club scene, Moby's always been this artist who's political, he's always been really alternative, and he always has fused different sounds in his music. And I think he turned a lot of people on to this style of music way before a lot of artists like DJ Shadow and some of the other better known ones and the ones that we haven't eaten yet.
Exactly.
Keep going.
Yeah, and he has a mind of his own. He speaks what he thinks, and sometimes, you know, you don't agree with it, but he has an original perspective on things. And,
right.
And this isn't horrible. It just isn't my cup of tea. There's a few moments. In fact, track number 8 I thought was kind of good. Almost reminded me of Donna Summer.
And that's, again, I don't think it's a music head's album. I think it should be listened to by the quote-unquote masses who, you know, they know electronic music as the play album and a couple of other things. You know, there's not a lot of people who've broken through on the level that Moby has. So, again, if those people pick this album up, I'll be happy, because it's not for the music heads. It's not for the cutting edge. He's not supposed to be cutting edge anymore. That was 10 years ago, you know, 15 years ago. Give the guy a break. He's not cutting edge now, but he should be supported in his endeavors in bringing this music to the masses, because it's never been big over here. And we who like it, who spend a lot of time in clubs, want it to be big. I do anyway. I want it to be commercial.
Do you think, Mark, this is a million seller? Do you think this album is going to go platinum in the States?
No, I'm not sure it is, because it seems like the marketing has just, to be honest, is given up on him. I mean, for a certain extent, if the music industry doesn't get behind him, it's not going to work. I think it could work. I think most of these tracks could be on a commercial or as a soundtrack to anybody's club night, and they would be happy.
Fair enough. Jim Noir is the stage name of the real-life Alan Roberts, who hails from Manchester, England. This guy is the maker of some of the most interesting bedroom recordings, mainly cut in his folks' house. I was a big fan of his previous album, Tower of Love. This guy dreamed of music early on. He fooled around with recording at his folks' house and found a knack for creating beautiful and catchy pop songs that were full of sunshine and simplicity. It's very catchy stuff. You've likely sang along to his songs, Eenie Meenie and My Patch. Jim Noir loves classic pop, and his music you hear hints of the Beach Boys, the Beatles, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, and even Kraftwerk. I also hear hints of late 50s and early 60s British producer Joe Meek, who popularized that space-age pop sound. His music isn't always throwback. He seems influenced by today's indie scene as well. His music plays alongside the Beta Band and Badly Drawn Boy quite well. Jim Noir's second album is simply called Jim Noir, and here's a slice of the tune, Don't You Worry. Jim Noir, a new self-titled album. Mark, is this working for you?
No.
I guess I'm not that surprised. The last one didn't work for you either.
Well, no, what? Always last album?
The
I know.
First Jim Noir album.
You know, I like, well, I like Jim would be a stretch. Jim is a great jingle writer. And I think that if we gave him enough money to have a few pints of a Saturday night down the local with his mates and said, you can sit in your bedroom and make music all day long, he would be as happy as Larry. I don't know why we force him out on the road and make him play this stuff with a band, because to me it doesn't work. It doesn't add anything to it. I think you mentioned the couple of jingle hits that he had on his last album. There's maybe one or two on here, but I don't even think he's got the confidence that it's got any more than one or two. And I think, again, we're kind of enabling him by forcing him to make a whole album and go out on the road and perform it with a band, because I don't think that's what it's about.
He hasn't been doing much touring. He does play at South by Southwest every other year, but he doesn't really conquer
right.
the states.
And I've got,
like
I mean, don't get me wrong, I've got nothing against jingle writers, but some of my friends have made a good living doing that, and it's a necessary thing to do, and if they want, they can dabble in their quote-unquote own music at night, but most of them don't want to go out on the road and don't want to tour, and sometimes it just struck me that we put him alongside a band that is structured to do that, and I don't think that's fair. I've never ever seen a violent punk or an interesting drum. Drunk or legal sunk. I've never ever had a healthy meal, cause there's always a deal. It's a convenient chippy.
David, how about you? Is this album working for you?
You know, I was a big fan of Tower of Love. I thought it was
me
good.
Me as well. Made it my top 10
I
of the year.
I thought it had lots of different textures on it, and it was kind of dark, and it was a reinterpretation. But, you know, I think this one's, this is what I thought of when I thought of it. It's appropriately titled. It's titled Jim Noir, and that's kind of what it is. It's really, he's kind of hit this formula, and each song really
it's
presents
pretty good
us
formula,
with that
though.
Formula. It's a good formula, but it's a formula that most people are familiar with, I think. The problem with this album that I had was, lyrically and the song titles, it just didn't do much at all.
Yeah,
what
you
gonna
a little
do,
weak lyrically.
What you gonna do, don't you worry.
But those melodies, those songs, that sunshine, you know, and to me, there's a lot of good songs.
Oh,
Happy Days.
With a sunshine day.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're catchy songs, but I found myself listening to the album over and over and over again, and it a couple of them stuck with me, but
yeah.
For the most part, it's just happy, yeah. Happy, shiny songs that...
In these tough times,
to
what's wrong
about.
With that?
And unfortunately, I think the lyrics just didn't really stand up to how well he did on his first
yeah.
record.
Well, yeah, lyrically, I don't think it's all that interesting, but I think there's plenty of interesting musical moments on the album, and I actually quite like it. How about Good Old Vinyl? There's a nice thought, huh? And I really got a kick out of cut number 7. Look Around You. It almost had kind of a reggae beat, and then the song kind of takes off and rocks. I thought that was exquisite as well. This guy can make some pretty catchy music. There's really no doubt about it to me. You're listening to Music Heads, presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. The story of Gnarls Barkley goes something like this. Danger Mouse gained acclaim or infamy when he concocted the Grey Album, a bootleg that mashed up the Black Album by Jay-Z with the music samples of the Beatles' White Album. Though a cease and desist order was posted, the Gorillaz' Damon Albarn loved it and hired Danger Mouse to create the beats for the second Gorillaz' album. Then Mouse wanted to do his own thing, so he enlisted CeeLo Green, formerly of the Atlanta, Georgia outfit Goody Mob, to sing in his newly formed Gnarls Barkley. They're back with a new album, and expectations are certainly high after the unexpected success of St. Elsewhere, which featured their across-the-board hit Crazy. Well, the jury is still out with me, but if you love St. Elsewhere, you'll probably love The Odd Couple as well. Like the Raconteurs CD we discussed a couple weeks back, this one was rush-released a few weeks ago due to its being leaked on the web. Gnarls Barkley's second album features more of the same, CeeLo's incredibly soulful vocal atop the studio wizardry of Danger Mouse, and more songs about going nuts and love. Here's a smidgen of Going On from Gnarls Barkley. Connect the cause and effect, one foot in front of the next. Is this the start of a journey? My mind is already gone, and the fear of the unknown somehow just doesn't concern. new Gnarls Barkley album is called The Odd Couple. This working for you, David?
I'm so excited to see this album come out, and I know people are going to say, sophomore slump. But how do you follow up Crazy? How do you follow up the biggest internet hit and maybe hit of last summer, you know? I think this album, much like the other one, has a ton of great songs. Yeah. They're all catchy. But I think this album is more of a CeeLo record. I think this is, you take CeeLo and you take his work with the Goody Mob and you take the lyrics and you scrub them clean and you make them for everyone, and that's what you've got on this record. It's really, really soulful, but the lyrics, you know, the stories are a little bit more family friendly. One of the things about this record that I didn't quite understand was, to me, Gnarls Barkley is kind of a concept, and I didn't really get the concept on this record. The first record, I felt like there were all these little short stories in their songs. This one's a little bit more vague for me.
What's wrong with just a good batch of tunes with no backstory?
There's nothing wrong with a good batch of tunes, but The Odd Couple. I didn't quite understand what they meant by The Odd Couple. I think I have really high expectations from this group, though. I think they're kind of a super group for me. Mm-hmm. So I expect a lot, but I do think we got a lot, and this is a really good record.
Mark Weed, is it working for you?
Oh, wow. I could go either way. No, you know, Gnarls Barkley has never worked for me, and except for Crazy. I mean, how can you not like Crazy? But I can't think that I ever sat down and listened to the rest of Saint Elsewhere. It never sucked me in. Never a big CeeLo fan from the old days, like David is saying his old stuff, so I don't get that reference too. I have to say I've got kind of short patience for his style of kind of this lazy R&B croon thing.
I think the guy's got an impeccable voice.
He's got an impeccable voice, but he tries to do, you know, he does it with kind of knowledge that there's rap out there and there's nuance. He tries to sound like an alt-rocker singing sometimes. If he just did the R&B croon thing, I think I would be okay with it. But too many of these tracks, he's trying to do something else with his vocals. And a lot of times, to be honest, they don't seem to fit with the instrumental, which I guess maybe I'm missing this, is that avant-garde. I get the feeling we're supposed to accept that that's avant-garde, that, you know, that they're not meshing at all on some of the tracks. Like track 10, She Knows, the vocals to me just don't reference the instrumentals at all. And again, as a DJ, maybe I'd love a little space in Danger Mouse's production. I know this is supposedly a concept, you know, so CeeLo's got to be all over it, but I'd kind of like Danger Mouse to have a few instrumental interludes at least, because sometimes I don't think what he does fits what CeeLo does. And there's 13 tracks on this thing. Again,
I think it's pretty tight, though. 45 minutes even, right in that vicinity.
But they should just be bringing out singles, I got to say. Track 3 that you played was good. We've been playing Run. Every time I play that, it sounds like I'm putting it on in the middle of the record. That's another thing that I have with
that
these
one
guys.
Does start odd, but I do like the funky organ in that song, in the song Run. Yeah. I think track number 2, Who's Gonna Save My Soul, that has hints of things like Portishead, and I just kind of love that, that spaghetti western feel. I think that's an awesome track.
No, that's a great track, and I love Surprise, actually. That's kind of my surprise.
Yes.
Because right after track 7, they mess with track 7, which you know how that's bad for me. They drop the F-bombs in there, and it's really just a one-joke song. So they lost me there, but then they hit me with Surprise, and I thought that kept it going. A lot of missteps on this. I mean, to me, Neighbors and Blind Mary are just about unlistenable. So
Blind Mary? Mm-hmm. I'm surprised by that. I just like the lyrics in the song. She's my friend. She doesn't judge me. She has no idea I'm ugly. In today's world, you know, in today's world of nip and tuck, I thought that's a just kind of a nice warm thought that he falls for a blind woman.
I think you guys really hit it, though, with the talking about how the songs start, because a bunch of these songs just like fade in. And to me, that's always a sign of, did you not know how to start the song? And especially off Saint Elsewhere, where the songs were just beginning to end. They were so complete. It's like they had thought out everything beginning to end. And track 7, Mark, I'm totally with you on that. Whatever makes no sense at all. I don't know why they put it on there. And I think there are some tracks on here that they just put them on there because they had them. So.
Well, I guess both of the sophomore albums now we're talking about, both the Jim Noir album and the Gnarls Barkley album. Well, it's now time for the portion of the show where we invite you to get involved. We're going to ask you to tell us your honest stories about music and its place in your life. We'll ask a different question every week. My guest and I will start it off and invite you to join with your story online. This week's question, what's the most you have willingly shelled out for a show and for what show? Mark.
You know, I got to be honest, I can't remember. I mean, I don't have one.
You don't have a ticket stub collection
referenced? I do have a ticket stub collection, but I didn't go back and reference because they're all pretty much kind of run-of-the-mill, you know, stadium, a couple of stadium shows. But I have friends, you know, that will spend money going on the road with a band and pay whatever they're going to ask the next time they come through town. And there's not someone that's still like that for me that I'll pay any money and or stand in a line. There's one that sticks out in my mind that I just had to go to. I think it was like 1990-91, which was Neil Young and Sonic Youth at Madison Square Garden. I think that was pretty pricey, but not way up there. But I just had to go to the venue because I'd never been before.
I saw that tour at Target Center.
I wanted to see Sonic Youth, and at the time I wasn't a huge Neil Young fan, and he actually turned me on by his performance that night. So it sticks in my mind, and it might have been a high ticket just because it was New York. But other than that, I don't go for the high ticket, must be there at all costs.
David, you?
You know, I don't go to a lot of the high-priced shows, but it's funny, Mark, that you mentioned Neil Young, because the two concerts that I remember thinking, this is an expensive show, one of them was Hordefest, when Neil Young, I want to say it was 1998. I honestly don't remember. I didn't get to go, though. I couldn't go. After I got the ticket, I couldn't go.
Parental unit said no, or what?
Someone took my ticket, but ooh, I did pay for it. The other one was the Queens of the Stone Age was to play the Quest. I'll just be outed as a Queens of the Stone Age fan.
Yeah.
And
nothing wrong with that.
They canceled. Josh Homme canceled. Wow. I think he cancels every time I've tried to see them.
Yeah, yeah.
And no excuse, and I didn't get to see them. So maybe that's why I don't go to the high-priced ticket shows.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I prefer the club shows myself, but I have to come clean. I just ponied up to $65 to go see Sly and the Family Stone coming up at First Avenue.
Wow.
And, you know, how else in the world are you going to get to see Sly Stone in the flesh? And I've been a Sly and the Family Stone fan for years, and apparently it's pretty much the original band, though Larry Graham, who lives in the Twin Cities, probably won't be there because I heard they don't... they don't like one another too much, and there's some feuding going on between those two. But I also ponied up $145 to see a festival not too long ago. That was the Austin City Limits Festival. Mm-hmm. But that's 3 days worth of music. $140, that's a lot of bang for your buck.
That is.
And on the bill, you know, there was people like, the White Stripes, who ended up canceling. So the bang for your buck went down a little bit there. But Bob Dylan was there. Clap your hands, say yeah. LCD Sound System. Wilco was there. My Morning Jacket, Arcade Fire, all for $145. So that's, you know, festivals to me are worth everything you pay for them, because it's all there over the course of a couple of days, and it's a pretty good deal. Well, those are our answers. So what's the most you've willingly shelled out for a show and for what show? Tell us your story online. Go to thecurrent.org and look for Music Heads. Then follow the links to join the discussion online. In this episode, we discussed Moby and the new album Last Night, the new self-titled album from Jim Noir, and Gnarls Barkley's second album, The Odd Couple. David Safar, thanks for joining me for Music Heads.
My pleasure.
Mark, thanks for having me.
You were the sunshine of my life, David. Thanks for having me.
Mark, a pleasure as well. It's a wrap. It's been Music Heads. Thanks for checking it out. Subscribe to the podcast of the show by clicking on Music Heads when you go to thecurrent.org. The program is produced by Steve Seal, and Michael Wells is the podcast production coordinator. Julia Schrenkler manages the show's online discussion, which we want you to be a part of. Go to thecurrent.org and look for Music Heads, then follow the links to join the discussion online. I'm Bill DeVille. We'll reconvene in another week for another installment of Music Heads, presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio.